Hello and welcome to the 15th season of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are back in the saddle as we look on at 13-year-old skateboarders and think, we could do that, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, with the new season just a week away, we can look forward to all the frills and spills that a new season has to offer. So that means the new kits, the new grounds to visit, the influx of exciting new signings. Okay, so there have only actually been two new signings of note thus far, but the outdoors been pretty busy, and with the window not closing for another 2 weeks, all that could change. But perhaps the biggest news as we go into the new campaign is that we will be without Tarek Lamptey, Danny Welbeck, and possibly Lewis Dunk as we kick off at Burnley next week. But we will have Adam Webster available, who's just signed a new 5-year deal with the club. Also today, we will celebrate the 10th anniversary of the first league game at the Amex. So today, as is tradition on the first show of the season, the band is back in session with our pre-season predictions, hopes and fears. So please welcome, on bassoon, we have, of course, Andy Bass. On harpsichord, it's Marcus Hancocks. And on Tibetan nose flute, we have Alan Wares. So happy new season, everybody. Nice to
what
see
you
your smiley, happy faces. I'm on whatever you want to give me.
Okay, you're on Planet La La.
It's nice there. It's nice. Yeah. So I mean, it's obviously we've had a fun summer with the Euros. Obviously, we've got the Olympics still going on, and obviously, I mean, I'm just to quickly touch on the Olympics. I mean, watching kids in the park skateboarding, amazing, absolutely amazing. 13 years old. I mean,
be careful of what you're saying here, A. Did you realise what it sounds like?
I'm basically saying that I could definitely not do what they did, and I'm in awe of them. I mean, me and coordination never really got on. And so what they can do on a skateboard is just mind blowing. And to all the other gold medalists and bronze and silver medalists, you've been absolutely inspiring. I think we can all agree with that, can't we?
Yeah. Did any one of us ever have a skateboard at the age of 13?
Yeah, but it was one of those cheap plastic sort of things. They're not like the skateboards are now, where they're, you know, like 6 foot long and 3 foot wide or whatever. This was like a really cheap plastic sort of, red one.
If you fast forward 30 plus years, 35 years, giving your age away here, Marcus, bearing in mind that when we were 13, when we watched the Olympics, it was all about the Americans or the Russians boycotting it. Now it's about winning gold medals for things that you used to annoy the local colonel or the local major about by breaking his legs in the local park. When did skateboarding become Olympic?
I think it's this year. They've introduced a lot of new sports. But it's always evolutionary anyway. I mean, you know, pigeon racing was in 1900, wasn't it? So I think so it's just, you know, and they need to get the youngsters, you know, interested in these sort of things. So if, you know, for new sports, bring it on. Yeah, some will work, some won't. Let's hope they keep introducing new sports and, you know, see how it goes.
But quite frankly, none of it counts with the, I mean, the BMX thing doesn't count unless they've got an ET on the front. That's the end of it.
Andy, I'll tell you what I'm impressed with, mate, is and I didn't realise this was happening, but certainly with triathlon and with swimming, where they've got mixed events, I think that's quite a leap forward, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, I know this is meant to be the Albion Roar, but we're turning into the Olympics Roar.
That's fine.
I could talk about this Olympics right now. I think it's been brilliant. I think the introduction of the new sports like skateboarding, BMX, BMX has been here before, I think, but it expands the appeal of it. It modernises it, takes it into the age that we're in now. And I think with the mixed relay events that they've been doing, again, speaking to the modern world, being a great part of it, it's been absolutely fantastic. Obviously, we've done quite well in those events as well. So obviously, we like them a little bit more than other country, because winning is all, but it's been a terrific Olympics. I think it's been exceptionally modern. I have not noticed the fact that there's no one there watching it at all, because the sport has been brilliant, and that's what I'm watching, and that's what's absorbed me throughout the early mornings of the last couple of weeks.
Okay, well, I mean, let's go back in time. Not quite as far as pigeon racing, but at least 10 years. And let's go back to the 6th of August, 2011. It was, as Al says, a red letter day in the club's history. A day where you either remember it or you don't remember it. And if you don't remember it, you were definitely there. And it was such a day of raw emotion. I mean, those two Will Buckley goals, just the sense of occasion, seeing the Amex fall for the very first time. I mean, talk me through your memories, Marcus, of that day.
Well, one of the first memories, I think we did an Albion Raw that day.
We didn't do the breakfast show, but we did a
breakfast two-hour thing, wasn't it?
That was the week before.
Was it a week before? Okay.
Yeah. It was the Spurs game.
They all blur into each other, don't they?
Blurring into each other now. But, you know, a sun, I believe, I think I remember the sun was shining. Could be wrong. This is August, but, I mean, looking out the window now.
Yeah. he wouldn't You're in Crawley.
Exactly. Well, yeah, there you go. Very excited. Some people I know took the open top bus. I think I got the train. And obviously it was great to see the hordes of people coming over the footbridge from the station, because where we are in the West Upper, you can see Falmer train station. Just all these blue and white just sort of coming over the platform and over the bridge and sort of milling around the stadium. And it was absolutely, it was absolutely fantastic to suddenly get, thousands of people supporting, supporting the Albion at a ground that, before then we was with Dean, and it was only, a handful, it's more than a handful, but only a few thousand people. It was absolutely, absolutely gobsmacking. And it's continued to grow ever since. I'll talk about the other stuff later, but
Andy, I mean, there was a massive sense of occasion about it. There was a lot of blue and white around the city before we actually got to the ground. The fact that we'd had 12 years with Dean coming into this one, obviously we'd had the Spurs game but the week before as a build-up to it, but this was the real thing. This was the league game, and against Doncaster as well. So talk me through your memories of that day.
Well, I think the fact that it was against Doncaster was particularly pertinent. We seem to be interlinked with them at various historic moments in both our club's history. I do remember being at Bellevue for one of the last, I think it might actually been their last league game at Bellevue. It just seemed really fitting that we were playing them. And I remember when they were going through the planning permissions for Falmer and all that work that was going through, and then the talk was the break-even figure was going to be 12,000, and that, and to be honest, for those of us who are with Dean, we're thinking 12,000 would be pretty good, compared to sort of the 4,000 to 7,000 that we were getting on a regular basis at with Dean in the early years, and then to be confronted with over 20,000. Brighton fans at that game. It was incredibly emotional. It was emotional because a significant number of the people that were at that game had played a major league part. And indeed, those people that couldn't get into with Dean that also played a part signing petitions and taking part in marches and just basically taking an interest in what was going on. And it was that we did this, and it was historic. And you felt it, lump in your throat time.
Yeah, Al. So I mean, that day as well, we got into the stadium, and let's not forget. I mean, it wasn't even a completed stadium at then. But at that point, the corners hadn't been filled in. There was no East Stand upper, but it was such the noise that we'd made, and it was something we couldn't do it with Dean really, because the ground didn't keep the noise in. But that first singing of Sussex by the Sea that day was just something else.
Well, the flags really helped. We had the flags all waving. I think there seemed to be a little bit of a delay. The team's coming out. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Something tells me we sang Sussex by the Sea twice. But I think the whole thing about the Doncaster game, which possibly made it a little less emotional, was the fact that we had been there the week before. So all those various things of, and you talk about it was 12 years that were with Dean. Don't forget it was 16 years of campaigning And even now, you look at it, 16 years of campaigning, and we've still only been at the Amex for 10. You realise how long we were campaigning. I mean, it's going to be, what is it, 2027 before we've spent the amount of time at the Amex that we have campaigning. Wow. Now, that's how ridiculous our predicament was before we got to the Amex. So anyone walking up, rocking up on the 6th of August for the first time, well, the first thing they're going to do is blub like a baby. Secondly, is they need to get into the ground fairly early on account of the fact that you're going to spend your time just looking absolutely everywhere, including the pitch, but everywhere but the pitch. And you also have to bear in mind that we had to mark the passing of Billy Sharp as well.
I was going to say that was you know, the end of his career. I don't think he's done anything since then, has he? Really?
No.
I lay flowers every game.
Scores the first goal and that's it. That's him done for. But yes, the whole thing was incredible. It was incredibly emotional. We've had people talking about it ever since. They remember that the you know, it was the whole lump in the throat thing. It was the start of the whole culture of pies and pints. Now, previously at Withdean, we couldn't have a drink. You had my overriding smell from Withdean was curry chips with curry sauce. My overriding smell from the Goulston was the catering. Well, you couldn't tell if it was the catering or the bogs. It's a different thing entirely again at the Amex, and that thing has lasted, and that started from day one. The culture of the Harveys and the Piglet's pie started from day one, and it continues and grows ever more to this day. So everything started on that day. It was kind of like, for me, chapter 3 in the history of the Albion started that day. And to be honest, you know, the odd glitch here and there, the odd hiccup here and there, we've not really looked back.
No, definitely not. And it's been the rise of the Albion, really, because I mean, obviously, the first game there was our first game in the Championship, and we fast forward 10 years to this season. It's going to be a record fifth year in the Premier League. So let's have a look at that, because obviously, that's what we're here to talk about.
Hang on a minute, Andy. Before we do that, listen, we have to talk about the crowning glory, that moment of the day. I mean, you can remember the flags, you can remember the build-up, you can remember the tears, you can remember everything about it. But the 97th minute winner, I know it's been touched on, but for me, it's a moment, it's a captured moment in the history of the Albion. I know that Andy's just mentioned it. Marcus, you know, limbs?
Yeah, quite exactly. I mean, where I am in the West Upper, of course, at the time, it was only the second game, because I did go to the Spurs game, as I said earlier. So it was still emotional to see a packed stadium, because it wasn't, you know, it was a pre-season friendly and, you know, it was more to get yourself familiar with the ground. But I'm quite used to where I am in the front row of the West Upper now, just above the 1901. But of course, then you still had the sort of, a bit like being in a high balcony at the theatre. So of course, when Will Buckley scored in the 97th minute, you worry that you might actually topple over into the 1901 from where I am. Thankfully, we didn't. But, you know, for a brief split second, you're almost like, actually, you know, because that was a goal that fairy tale stuff, quite frankly. Absolutely, as Alan was saying, you know, limbs is the apt description, and certainly, you know, one of the probably for goals at the Amex, you know, it's probably in the top three for the quality, but as well as the sort of significance, as Alan was saying, and what it brought. You know, Solly March against Wigan would be another one of the sort of, you know, landmark goals at the Amex, if that makes sense. You know,
against West Brom, for instance, is another one.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's definitely in, if not the top three, top five, and maybe, who knows, even the top one, bearing in mind the time and the occasion and everything else that went with it.
Okay, so we're now going into a record fifth season in the Premier League for the Albion. Not a lot has changed from last year, really. I mean, there's been only two real first team contenders come in so far in the shape of Kel Sherpen and Enoch Mwepu. Mwepu does look like an exciting signing. We'll come to that in a minute. But let's look at the outs. I mean, we touched on it briefly last week, but Marcus, Andy, the Ben White transfer. A lot of people are saying that congratulations to Arsenal for signing our third best England qualified centre back. I mean, you know, he's got a lot. What they're doing there is signing a lot of potential. I mean, it took him a while to get into his stride last year, I think, but he's a very, very good player.
Well, I've got quite a few Arsenal mates and they've all been asking me, what's he like? And say, is he worth 50 million? I said, well, is he worth 50 million now? Probably not, but by the end of the season, it'll be worth 70 or 80. So you've got yourself a bargain there. And, you know, he won't fix your defence overnight because your defence is absolutely terrible and he can't do it all on his own. But he will make it better. He will make it better and he'll instantly be your best defender. And, yeah, it's a good deal for everybody. We get a good return. You know, we get a lot of money. We've got people that can fill his position immediately. We don't have to spend a penny to replace him. He gets to move on to a higher level. I suspect he'll probably end up playing at a team better than Arsenal sooner rather than later. And it's just one of those situations where it's just a win-win all round. I'm slightly sad that we were not able to complete his development and he'll complete it at Arsenal. Like AD said, it did take a while to get into his stride last season. I think the player that finished the season was infinitely better than the one that started it. But the one that ended it was really flipping good.
And got himself into the England team as well. Well, England squad as well, Marcus.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's probably quite good that we didn't see him play live. I mean, we only saw him a couple of times, if you were lucky, against Man City, and probably that window just before Christmas, in between sort of lock, you know, when we were allowed 2,000 fans into the stadium. So I think, you know, it's brilliant business for the Albion. You know, young player, not stood in his way, gone on to bigger and better things. So, you know, that sends a signal to all the other players at the Albion. You know, if the right offer comes in, you know, and it's the right terms for us, you know, we will happily, you know, sell you on, but also we can develop you as well if you're a young player coming in from this end. Do I feel as attached to Ben White as no, probably because, as I say, I haven't seen him play that much for the Albion. If it was Dunk, I think that would probably be harder to take. Albeit just because, you know, he's one of our own, so to speak. But overall, yeah, absolutely delighted. Absolutely delighted with the money, delighted for Ben White. And, you know, good luck to him.
There's a couple of things I want to say about this, hypotheses that I want to say about the sale of White. One is that if he had gone to another Championship club that had done well or even got promoted with him in there, if he'd have gone to a different one other than Leeds United, I don't think we'd have had the hype. I mean, Leeds fans just took to Twitter, took to social media, proclaimed him as the second coming, not seen a defender like it since Rio Ferdinand, et cetera, et cetera, and really went OTT on the hype. Now, the thing is, if they wanted something else out of it was going to clearly backfire because you think that's going to work on Tony Bloom. So, one, you had the hype. And I can't help but thinking that actually Gareth Southgate sort of went into that because as Andy's, we sort of gently rib tickle it. But as Andy said, there's no way that Ben White has finished his development.
No, absolutely.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Every player carries on with their development until they finish playing. But, you know, Dunk.
The only thing I'll say that doesn't worry me, although it's Arsenal's problem now, not ours, is that he's not the commanding sort of centre-half, sort of as Andy was saying about, you know, he's not going to sort out the Arsenal defence. And he has had sort of, you know, the benefit of playing with Webster and Dunk, who are experienced, and obviously Veltman as well, who's got, you know, masses of experience playing, you know, in the Champions League, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and Arsenal don't have another sort of experienced player, I believe, to kind of play alongside him. So, that might, you know, he'll do
well. That's going to fire for him then, isn't it? In that case, he's going to be the main defender at Arsenal.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I'm going back a bit, but you know, if he was next to a Boulder and Adams or someone like that, you know, he'd probably, you know, as Andy said, he'd probably be worth 100 million by the end.
He was never the senior partner in our defence.
No.
Yeah. Exactly.
The additional thing I do want to say is that, again, it's the question that you asked, Andy, about is he worth 50 million quid? Now, I would say to that is that it's a 50 million. Let's put that as an arbitrary figure. The 50 million. It's not like, you know, a football manager or whatever the online computer games are that, right, so-and-so is worth, he's got this amount of quality about him, therefore he's worth 50. A slightly lesser player is 45. With the Albion, they had no intention of selling. Had no intention of selling. But as Tony Bloom has always said, every player has his price. And 50 million was clearly the benchmark that Tony had in mind because that's what they ultimately agreed to. It was also down to how the Arsenal were going to be paying for Ben White, because, you know, we've been done over before. But okay, you can have 10 million now, you can have 10 million, and we'll have, you know, we'll have 10 million when he farts and 10 million when he breaks his toe and 10. And you think, no, come on, you're the Arsenal. You know, you're not all right. You're not minted, but you're big enough that you've got, you know, so that the deal is such that the Albion are actually not going to be, you know, sort of looking over their shoulder at worrying that Ben's not going to get crocked. But it's the figure that Tony has put on and placed on the loss that we have on the back of the development that we've put in over the past 5, 6, 7 years, or however long it is he's had. It's the figure they've put on it. It's not necessarily about the quality of him on the pitch. It's what the quality of what he brings to the team. It's what the quality is, partially of what he brings to the team on the pitch. And as we've said, he's not the finished article. And Arsenal are paying £50 million to take over the development of a promising young talent. So to say, is he worth 50 million quid? And then you get people on Twitter arguing, well, so-and-so came for 30, so-and-so came for 40. It doesn't work that way. It's not as simple as that. It's not what it's worth to Arsenal. It's what it's worth to us.
But Al, I mean, he won the player of the season last year. You know, I mean, none of us predicted that.
Single time a Leeds United fan opened his trap, we got a few more quid.
It helped that Leeds bid. I think it helped that Leeds bid 30 million for him the season before. So kind of that's the starting point. And so Tony Bloom will sit there and say, well, you know, last year he's worth 30 and he's done a full season in the Premier League now. So, and as Alan said, I think it's probably 50 million up front as opposed to instalments, or 40 million plus another 10 if he plays another 10 caps for England and blah, blah, blah. They are getting a player that can cover two or three positions. So, you know, they've probably got that in mind as well. You know,
I think this is just a move that actually kind of suits everyone. And as Andy said earlier, or maybe you said earlier, we have players, not necessarily who are at the same stage, but we have players who are there ready to step up. And I've got great hopes for Leo Ostergaard. He got shining reviews at Coventry. Admittedly, not as big a side as Leeds were when they were last in the Championship, but I've seen him play a couple of times and there is something about him. So hopefully it's not as though, you know, that money needs to be splashed straight away.
Okay, so let's have a quick chat about other players that have gone. Some great servants to the club here as well, and certainly some fantastic memories. But Matt Ryan has gone to Real Sociedad. Davy Perth has gone back to PSV. And Jose Escobedo was released. The others, Bernardo's gone to RB Salzburg, and Gorkarez has gone to Coventry. Matt Clark, who's destined never to play for the club ever, he's now on loan at West Brom. Jenks, Weir, Cochran, Longman have all gone out on loan. I mentioned Gorkarez, didn't I? But I mean, you know, those first three, Matt Ryan, David Perpa, and Jose Escobedo, I mean, what are your memories of those guys?
Well, Izquierdo provided the flair memories, the goals, the continual stream of goals against West Ham. that goal at Stoke, that smile, and that miniature pet that he had. a lot of happy memories for Jose. He just got absolutely sidelined by a brutal injury that took away his greatest asset, which was his speed. And whilst he was recovering, the club just moved past him. And it's really quite sad. I think if he didn't get that injury, we maybe could have brought him along with us And it's genuinely sad to see him go, but you know, certainly a player wish all the best for whatever, wherever his career takes him now.
Absolutely. So which one of those was your favourite? Which of those goals? And we're talking about one of three here, aren't we?
I know people go on about the team goal at Stoke, but really that one that he bent into the corner against West Ham at the Amex, unsavable. Unless the goalkeeper was already standing there a few minutes in advance on a ladder with his arms wide, stretched out wide, absolutely no chance. The precision was exquisite. It's an absolute that I loved it. The Stoke game, I'm going to reserve for Matt Ryan's greatest moment, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Marcus, there was a player I've left off the list then. I've done that.
I did notice.
Now, Marcus, are you sitting comfortably?
Got it.
Ali Reza Shahanbash. No, I know he's your bet noir, but I mean, I still think there was something to come from him. I don't think we ever found his best position. I know there's a player there, but I mean, it just never worked out for him, let's face it.
No, sadly it didn't. There was obviously, as you say, there must have been a player there, but I think it was probably the Premier League was just either too fast or too strong for him. Yeah, okay, he was played out of position under Chris Hughton, et cetera, et cetera. He found a little bit of form under Potter. He had a decent delivery when his mind was at it, and he did score in the end. He did score some YouTube real goals. I mean, you know, who can forget the Chelsea goal? And you know, he cracked in a couple of pearlers in sort of Coca-Cola Cup competitions, but. You know, it wasn't enough. I think everybody wanted him to do well because, let's be honest, he seemed a really nice, decent professional. And everybody and every player that talked about him is, you know, he was one of the good guys. You know, there's certain players at the Albion at the moment doing the rounds on social media for stuff going on outside of the football club, as we probably know who they are. Namely, play up front and miss lots of open goals. Let's leave it there.
That doesn't really narrow it down.
Okay, Aaron Connolly doing another rounds on Twitter with some other thing at a nightclub, but you know, but getting back to Shahanbash, he was absolutely, you know, everybody, I think everybody wanted him to do well, and it's just a shame that it didn't quite cut it in the end. And I'm glad he's got his move, and I think he'll do well in Holland. I think it's probably the best league for him. For a player of that, of that caliber, it was a shame he had the big price tag and allegedly one of the highest earners at the club, I think, which didn't help either.
Well, actually, I mean that's two players that have gone this summer, which were record signings for us. I mean, Lacardi is still around by the looks of it. I don't think he's actually come back training, is he?
No idea.
But you know, Esquerdo was a record signing. Esquerdo was a record signing. As was Shahanbash, but let's go on to another player that has gone back to Holland. And Al, I know Davy Purpo is a player that you appreciated.
I think probably one of my favourite parts of his outhousery, and I couldn't tell you who it was against, possibly Newcastle, could be wrong, where there's a player who he's trying to get past Purpo. He doesn't. He grabs him by the throat, throws him away. Next player goes hurtling past him with the ball, and he decides to clatter him from behind. The easiest yellow card ever given. Of course, that's not how we're going to remember Proper. He was absolutely key, absolute pivotal alongside Dale Stevens. For me, still one of the best midfielders we've had until a year later when Bissouma turned up. But the Stevens Proper partnership, which I think actually attracted a lot of scorn, wrongly in my opinion, for the fact that they were arguably too negative. I think they were probably just played slightly out of position, the pair of them. But, you know, on his day, he could pick a pass. Don't get me wrong, on his day, he could also find that pass for the other team. But when he was on fire, he was probably on fire. His goals return is pitiful and totally disproportionate to the effort that he put in. But
Al, do you think that there was a diving header he had against Man City in the first game in the Premier League that cannoned off the post? I mean, it's on such thing, careers can hinge sometimes. And I think if that had gone in, I do think his confidence-wise, his goal scoring would return would have been better.
I think it
would
have just made Manchester City more angry. no, it's He was. I tell you what, it would have been. We'd have absolutely destroyed the championship if it had been in our side. But to actually then come to England and play, you know, his first Premier League game at our first Premier League game and looked like he'd been here for a long time, I thought that was pretty cool. I liked his, and I do use this word a lot, I liked his tenacity. I did like his skill. I didn't like the grief he got from people criticising him wrongly, in my opinion, for being too square or not being forward enough. There was a touch of menace about him, and I always enjoyed watching him play, except for that obligatory one howler 5 minutes in every single game.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think he was one of the best long-range forward passers we've had at this club. I understand people criticising him for going sideways when he was one of the best pingers of a ball that we've had.
Yeah,
you can only pass the ball forwards if there's someone there to pass it to, and quite often there wasn't.
Which surprises me. Just I know obviously we've got other players to talk about, but it surprised me because Proper seemed to strike me as a Potter type player, and even in the sort of when we had the season break in lockdown, I think he signed a contract extension, but then he came back after project restart. And he didn't seem to be the player that he was before, up until that point, he was doing really well. And he, when Potter came in, it's like, well, the one person who's probably going to thrive in this environment is going to be Davey Proper, because we all know he was a baller, so to speak.
He did have some niggly injuries, though, and he did get COVID, which hit him quite hard, and it took him a while to come back from.
Even so, I still think it would have been an asset for him to stick around.
Yeah, I do as well. But, obviously, he's chosen elsewhere. And, again, good luck to him. He goes, our best wishes because, he did well for us overall.
I do agree. I think that he would have been an asset if he was still here. But when you look at the players that we've got coming through, he probably saw the writing on the wall. He probably wasn't going to be getting a game. And we've got, as we record this, Eve Bissouma is still a Brighton player. Hopefully, come the end of August, he still will be. But then we've got, obviously, we've just signed Inet Mwepu, who looks like he could be a perfect four for him. And actually, he can shoot by the looks of it under the crossbar. I know. It's like, Eve Bissouma, by far our player of the season last year. Forget Ben White getting it. But at times when he's shooting, I think he is playing rugby. But and he'd be excellent at conversions. But but when he does hit it into the top corner, it stays there, doesn't it? That's a succession plan though, and obviously Kachido coming through as well, and we've got a lot of other midfielders who've gone out on loan. That midfield area is very, very, very strong for us, and we know it's not necessarily the area that we need to strengthen. Okay, well, we'll talk about Enoch Mwepu in a minute. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. As ever, we are delighted to be still with you in association with oldfootballshirts.com here on Radio Reverb. And Phil has given us his first shirt of the week for this season. And, where do you start with this one, boys?
A fishing net.
Well, you originally start a theme park ride in Las Vegas, but I think you might need to go further south in the continent to find out where this shirt actually came from.
Marcus, do you want to physically describe it?
It's kind of, I think it's sort of light green and white, but it's got a sort of like a fishnet pattern on it, with a picture of it's either Keith Richards or Captain Jack Sparrow, I think, in the middle of the shirt, and also on the badge as well. I like it, I'll be honest. It's different.
It does look like the Jack Sparrow on it does look like it's just like someone's got a sticker from Andy's theme park. Okay, well, I'll give it to you. This is the 2018 home shirt of the Peruvian League 2 side, Molinos El Pirata. And no, okay. Your eyes do not deceive. That is indeed Captain Jack Sparrow, not only on the front of the shirt, but also as part of the club badge. Okay. El Pirata FC was formed in 2010, and they play at the 7,000 capacity Estadio Cesar Flores Magorda, which is in the city of Chiclayo, in the Lambayeque region of northwest Peru. They adopted the Disney character Jack Sparrow's face for their badge shortly after they were formed, and went with it until they qualified for the 2018 Copa Peru Cup final stage, group stage, at which point the Fun Police drew the copyright infringement card and they had to revert to a generic pirate drawing. That didn't stop them completely going through as they sought out Jack Sparrow lookalike from an agency and used his image for various campaigns. Well done then. As it happens, they eventually won the 2018 Copa Peru, which is their only national honour to date. The current squad includes no one you've ever heard of. They're all Peruvian, and none of them have ever played outside of their home country. The only link to Brighton that he can find is that Bob Booker once dressed up as a pirate at the end of the season's shindig, apparently. So thanks for that, Phil. And of course, you can see that and over 110,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Please go and have a look and see the many, many glorious shirts and some not so glorious that are on offer over there. Before we move on, let's just quickly talk about the arrival of Ian Mwepu, who joined us from RB Salzburg. Scored an eye-catching goal in the friendly at Luton at the weekend, as did Percy Tau, actually, who looked a right live wire in that game. Hopefully there'll be some more to come from him. But Mwepu, what do we think?
Like it.
Yeah, same here. Very good. He looked very comfortable. I know it was only Luton, et cetera, but he did look like a decent signing. I think he'd do well this year.
Yep. The potential tandem with Bissouma looks like they could be complementary players, especially as unlike Eve, who is brilliant, by the way, but he can't shoot for toffee. Mwepu can, and I just think that could be an extremely creative and industrious midfield.
Are they complementary or similar? I mean, would you have both or would you have either or?
I'd make both work. You have two players like that. You play them. You figure it out. That's what you get paid to do, Mr.
Yeah. Well, that means somebody missing out, of course. But I mean,
Lallana keeps getting crocked in. Lallana is actually one of my favourite players. So yeah. Lallana and Bissouma, even though it does sound like a Beach Boys song, they did actually work very well together. Not often enough because one was either suspended or crocked. But it sounds like what you're saying here, Andy and Marcus, is that Mwepu is more likely to be the candidate to replace Adam Lallana than maybe anyone else. True?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think Lallana, I mean, he signed on a 3-year deal, but it's clear that he knows he's coming to the end of his career. He knows he's not going to be playing every game. He knows he is going to be coming off the bench sometimes or getting substituted early in matches, etc. And he's obviously being lined up for a coaching role and, etc. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a Lallana replacement.
Ironically, I think this means we'll get more out of Lallana because we don't have to use him so much.
Yeah, exactly.
We can use him in certain situations. We can look after him, make sure that we don't wear him out. If we're only giving him half an hour a game, he's less likely to break down, on a regular basis. So this could be good for Lallana, even though it means he plays less 90 minutes. You sign someone with Enoch's pedigree already. He's been such a success in Salzburg. And like Salzburg are just, they make play. Like we make centre-backs. They make, unknown players into sellable assets that go on to do well elsewhere. And then they always have the next one up. That they replace them with. It's a good place the people at Salzburg have a good eye for a player, and they move them on when they can make some good money out of it. And yeah, I like this signing. I think he looks good. I think his personality seems excellent. Again, very much in the sort of Basuma mold. He's got his own song, his little Instagram dances, and all TikTok and all that nonsense. But yeah, the kids seem to like it. So who am I to argue?
He thinks he's going to get the best out of Danny Welbeck as well. So I just think
very exciting. I'm a very exciting prospect. I'm looking forward. If he can make those two work together in the middle of the park, that's something to be frightened.
Well, can I throw this one back at you then? In that case, I'll throw this one open to you. I mean, let's assume that we've got Danny Welbeck, one of our better players up front, and we're going to play with three up front. How does that then fit for you with what we could do with, for me, the surprise package, but a welcome surprise package last year of Pascal Gross?
Again, it's going to be situational. To be honest, with the dynamism of Mwepu and Basuma, it kind of makes more room for Gross because of his, I mean, even though he does deceptively cover every blade of grass on the pitch, the amount of running he does is ridiculous, but he doesn't do it very quickly. So it creates room for him to really operate with a bit more freedom, I would have thought. Yeah. Because he's kept busy by the busier players. And then you can use the thing that Gross has got is a great eye. Yeah. Got a great eye for a gap to put the ball in. He's great at spotting runs that other people make. It gives him more time to like really work, maximize that aspect of his game.
But I mean, if we are going to play Mwepu and Basuma in tandem, that gives us license to actually utilize a proper number 10, of which Gross can operate, McAllister can operate.
I don't think Potter's even as inflexible as saying having a number 10, because a number 10 is a kind of a something that really better fits into a 4-4-2. You know, start playing just behind the number 9. And let's face it, if there's one thing that Potter doesn't do, or if he does, it's very rare, is play 4-4-2. He'll almost always go for one up top and then two people supporting him on the outside, whether that's as wide players or as tucked in. If anything, you'd have two number 10s in your parlance, Adi. But so the whole notion of the number 10, as you put it, I think is probably going to cross over between Basuma and Mwepu if what Andy's saying is it comes to pass.
Obviously, last season we played with a back three, and then pushing up the fullbacks, and it's looking like a back four might be an option that we use more often this season than we have done in previous seasons. I think, I mean, that's the thing about this squad at the moment is there are lots of different combinations we could do now. Now, like when we're talking about that, when you're saying, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to fit Gross into the team? You could say that about several positions now. This is a stacked squad now. And picking the team is going to be no easy task for Graham Potter this season, I think. He's got a lot of decisions to make, mostly they'll all be good ones.
Picking the 25-man squad could be a challenge at the moment. I mean, there's still some players that are probably still going to leave. One of those, I suspect, will be Christian Walton after the signing of Karel Sherpen from Ajax. So I can't really say I know an awful lot about.
He's taller than Dan Byrne.
Well, that is something. I'm going to say it, Al. He's taller than Dan Byrne. And because we might as well just keep repeating it, because that's something that every single commentator will pick out. Apparently, did you know Dan Byrne's tall? I just had no idea.
Marcus, could you comment on this revelation?
What, that Dan Byrne's tall, but we've now signed a player even taller?
Yes. Yeah. Bunch of basketball freaks we are now.
But I mean, but Andy, I mean, that probably does like call time on Chris Walton's time with us, do you think?
Yes, sadly, his ill-timed injury in the Chelsea friendly last season has probably cost him his place at this club. He's clearly a good goalkeeper, and he will get another job where he will just start. He's done very well in all the loan spells that he's done, and he looked poised to be the number one backup to Ryan last season. And cruel twists of fate meant that Big Bad Bob got in ahead of him and hasn't looked back, because he's been absolutely brilliant. And that is the life of a goalkeeper, I'm afraid. It's, you can only play one.
I know we're about to do our predictions in a couple of minutes, but here's a 10-year prediction. Christian Walton, by the time he hangs up his gloves, will have played at least 600 games in his career. It may not be at the top flight, and it certainly won't be for us. I think he's already got 150, you know, behind him already. But this is a fella, by the time he's done, this is a 600-game career that I think he's going to have, because he is a very, very good goalkeeper. You're right about the accident, but seeing as now Jason Steele appears to be ahead of him in the pecking order, plus we've got the taller than Dan Byrne goalkeeper, and then Robert Sanchez, who, you know, hopefully under Ben Roberts will only ever get better and better. I think that's our that's our senior goalkeeping lineup at the moment. And it is a shame for Christian Walton at Brighton, but let's face it, he, I think certainly from the Championship on downwards, really ought to be able to have a pick of any club that he wants, really.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think he will. And I know we sort of touched on it, and Andy was going to mention it. But, you know, I'm talking of goalkeepers, obviously, you know, Matty Ryan going as well. I know Andy was probably going to touch on his, you know, the save of the penalty against Stoke. Would that be you know, again, we haven't really mentioned Matty Ryan. But, yeah, you know, he did well for us for three seasons. Let's not forget, he was as much as a part of building the Albion, you know, the modern history of the Albion, as any other goalkeeper in recent memory. So, but getting back to Walton, yeah, he could have a pick of any Championship club, I think. He is good. It's just a shame it's not with us.
One player we didn't mention there as well was Carl Rushworth, who I know that myself and Andy, I think you have seen him play out, but we saw him. And he's got he's the guy that Barcelona was sniffing around for a little bit, but blimey. I mean he could possibly be exceptional as well. So good luck to him at Walsall, where he's gone on loan. So that's a good.
So centre backs and goalkeepers, we're churning out 10 a penny, aren't we?
Yeah, in midfield, we're all right. I think we're all right in midfield. It's just, the age-old problem of who replaces Glenn Murray.
Before we move on, I just want to quickly. I mean, obviously we've only actually played the two friendlies. We're not going to go into the details of those. But Shane Duffy and Florian Andoni are both heavily involved in both of those games. I mean, could there be a place for them at all in the when they're 25-man squad?
Yes, I'd have to say. I'd certainly have to say yes with regards to Andone, simply because it's another forward option. I mean, obviously, we've heard all the stories about him, you know, having his leaving party in a phone box and all that stuff. But really, we don't know. I mean, what he's like. We don't know how he is with the other players. We don't know what he's like with Graham Potter. We do know he's come back from a serious, serious injury. And we do know that he's offers something that our other forward players don't offer at the moment. And these are the forward players we've got. And, he got off to a pretty good start, Andone, with the Albion. Bit of a hothead, which does need sorting out. But in terms of, like, his striking ability, he could end up saving us a lot of money, because I'm not seeing another striker coming in before the end of the transfer window, to be perfectly honest.
But as for Duffy, I think that actually if he did stick around, I think personally he's gone back in the queue. If we're talking about the first three choices of centre-backs, at the moment, logic would dictate, I think, Veltman, Dunk and Webster, with the possibility of Ostergaard. Hayden Roberts is coming through. There may be another, and I think
Dan Byrne.
Dan Byrne on the other side. I'm thinking that those.
He's tall.
He's ahead of Roberts, certainly, but I he might be on at the moment. His stock has gone, you know, crash and burn horribly and miserably. And let's face it, it's not as though he didn't want to go to Celtic, you know, kind of one of his boyhood clubs, you know, his dream sort of thing. And so it's not as though he went there under sufferance and by all accounts had a bit of a miserable season. You know, you could argue, you know, Rangers fans were taunting him like they wouldn't believe. They thanked us massively for Balogun, for Goldson and for Duffy. So, you know, it shows you the kind of season he's had. Has he going to be able to, you know, he can play alongside Lewis Dunk, and it would be okay if it was the two at centre-back, but in the Premier League now under Potter? Can't see it.
No. Well, only Graham Potter knows the answer to that question. Whether and you know he might get another run out against Getafe this weekend. We'll that only time will tell. But okay, well let's move on to our predictions then. Obviously,
What you mean is wild guesses.
They are wild guesses. You are absolutely right. Honest, I mean, last year we did pretty well with these actually. So I mean, I have got Phil Shelley's predictions as well from oldfootballshirts.com.
Okay.
Phil's like been sensible this year. They're actually open for discussion. But let's start with number one, which is player of the season. Andy Bass, what have you gone for?
I think it's going to be Lewis Dunk.
Thank you. Marcus?
I gave this a lot of thought, and I think it's going to be Big Bob Sanchez this year.
That's a reasonable shout. I hope it isn't, because that means that he's had
no. So do I. Because I know what you mean by that, because it means we can have it every week.
I am going to go for the same runoff between Bissouma and Dunk that logic dictated should have happened last year and got completely whitewashed.
You can't have both. You've got to pick one.
Bissouma, just because it's his turn.
Okay. Biss, who thoroughly deserved it last year. And I do need to point out that Phil has gone with Adam Webster as player of the season.
Your favourite, Marcus?
Well, you know what? I mean, if he plays, we know how good he can be. It's just he needs to do it for the whole season and not in dispatch, not in bits and pieces like he has been. I know he's had the odd injury because he was a late chat about England, but then he got injured. And yeah, fair enough, I can see it. But he needs to drop the Adam Alab style rickets every now and then. But he will do. Because there is a player there. I know I'm on his back a lot, but that's because I know he can do better.
So. Well, he had got brilliant and then got injured, came back, and that's when the rickets started again.
Yeah. Exactly, which is again fair enough.
There is a stat. I think he in terms of forward carries, he was the best defender in Europe for that last year.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Yeah. He will probably play for England this season, to be honest with you. And he's come through the system as well.
And a dashed good goal against Manchester City as well. Yeah. Right. So who's your choice of player of the season then, Shani?
My choice is if ands and buts and pots and pans.
Well, yes.
But if he's still here, Bissouma.
And if he isn't?
If he isn't, Danny Welbeck.
Is that wishful thinking, or do you genuinely think that's going to be the case?
I think if Danny Welbeck is player of the season, that's because he scored a lot of goals, and that's what I might hope.
So you pick two players, one who might be on his way and one who might not be fit.
The team is going nowhere.
No, I fully agree, Andy. I fully agree. Okay, yeah, Andy,
he's a Rolls Royce of a player, and I hope he's still here, for sure. Goal scorer, I'll start with Phil, who has gone with Danny Welbeck. Al, who have you got?
I guess that probably because with the and this is me slightly sitting on the fence, because the transfer window doesn't shut until 2 weeks into the season, then and we always have this caveat, albeit it doesn't look like we're going to sign a striker. As much as he is Sir Miss-a-Lot, I think I'm going to go for Neil Mopay again.
Okay, Andy Bass.
I'm going with Neil Mopay with slightly more confidence than Al. I think he'll be better. I think he'll be more clinical this season. He's had a lot of time to sort of look at how last season went. He gets in goal scoring positions. I think he'll score more this year.
Okay, Marcus.
You know what? I did give this a lot of thought, so I'm going to stick my neck out and I'm going to say Florin Andoni.
Wow.
We haven't got to the wild card bit yet. No, I know. I've got another one, but I'm going to stick my neck out and say I reckon the chat about the fact that we might not get another striker, but he'd still offer something anyway. So So I'm going to say Florin Andoni. He's now going to probably get injured or get sold, but you know.
Adrian,
I could have said LaCardia.
I've actually said more pay as well.
Yeah. Okay, in that case, can I actually bring this back to something that you predicted at the beginning of last season, AD? And I know it's an extra thing with this, so if you can write this down as well, let's really stick our necks out. Bearing in mind that you said three people will score more than 10 goals this season, we've named our top scorers. How many will they get in the league only? Let's talk about
10.
13.
How much, Andy?
13.
Okay, Marcus?
11.
Yeah, I'm going to go for, in that case, around a dozen for Neil Mope.
All right, so moving on then to number three, and that is for our breakthrough player of the season. Of course, actually, we're going to put all of this out on social media, and we'd love to hear what yours are going to be as well. But let's start with you, Andy. Who do you think is going to be the breakthrough player for this season?
This is actually quite a tough one, because I'm just trying to think of spots that are actually open that might potentially be open for breakthrough players. And I'm probably not the only person who's gone for this player. I'm going to say Leo Ostergaard. I think we're going to keep him. He's very keen to play, and I think I just think that there is an opening there, that third central centre half, once they don't have to shoehorn Veltman in as a sort of a fullback thing. I just think he's the one. I just think if we're going to keep him, we're going to play him.
Okay.
Because he wants to play, and if he's not going to be at least second choice, he'll be off. But I think if we keep him, he plays, and
that'll do well. Okay, Marcus.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, it depends on what we're classifying as breakthrough, because obviously there's players like Gyökeres and stuff. But I think
Gyökeres is gone.
Oh, of course he has. Yeah, sorry. In that case, I know. Hayden Roberts. There you go. He's going to come through. We like the young players. He's just come back from his loan stint at Rochdale, albeit they didn't do well. But I think he's played sort of youth level at England and stuff like that. So he's come through the system as well. So and he's looked good the couple of times he's played in the sort of Coca-Cola Cup matches for us. Ben White started in, I think, one of those games as well. Maybe. I could be wrong. But yeah, that's my one.
Okay. Phil has gone for Andy Zakiri.
Is he a breakthrough? Yes.
Yeah,
I nearly went for him, actually. That would have been my second choice. So, yeah, he is a breakthrough player.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Okay, and Al?
I think that Ostergaard is the fairly sort of logical one. He's the one that's been spoken about next as the, you know, sort of as the conveyor belt moves along, Ostergaard is going to be the main beneficiary of that. I think that to send him out on loan again might actually could actually end up being a little bit futile.
Is Modal a breakout player or not?
No, because he played about the last five or six games. He started most.
Yeah, okay.
But the other one that springs to mind was someone who had until someone decided to whack him, who had a very good Copa America, is Caicedo. He's the next possible breakout one. Now, he's now had Mwepo put in front of him in the queue, but that doesn't mean to say that he won't make the 18-man score on match day. So, if I'm going to say anyone that isn't Ostergaard, okay, although I still could say Ostergaard, the next one I think that in the queue would be Caicedo. Okay. I've seen the under-23s play recently. Now, there was a lot of stick that they got because they lost 6-0 to Sutton, albeit that was Sutton's first team, and they are now a League Two team. And with the under-23s, whilst they've done very well recently, a lot of them now are kind of under-18s, under-19s. In other words, there's a little bit of a gap before you could actually see too many of the under-23s making that next leap. So the current under-23s are actually quite young at the moment. So, you know, I don't expect great things in the next couple of years, I'd suggest, apart from sort of obviously all those players making the progress that they need to towards first team football.
Like, I mean, most of them are out on loan of the decent ones, like Teddy Jenks, etc.
Yeah.
He's someone who's really rated. But I've actually gone for someone who he did actually make his Premier League debut last year. And then he got injured and we didn't see him for a while. But that's Redeker Khedira, who's been very, very highly rated. The fact that Shahan Bash is gone now. We haven't really got any out and out wingers anymore, really, apart from Solly March. But he's been played as a wing back. But Kedra is he's the next one off the rank, I think, and I think he looks very promising. Got a good pedigree. Came to us from Dortmund. And I think that he could be given an opportunity to shine this year, particularly with, I mean, I think we're down. Are we still on the seven, or is it nine now?
The next year? I'm
not quite sure what it's going to be.
Yeah, could be a one of 15, and you can use six of them, but provided it's a Tuesday, and if it's raining and you're in Barnsley, then you might be able to use half a substitute, so one of his legs can come on. I've no idea what they're doing with it these days. And don't even get me started on how VAR is going to work this year. What's the next question, mate?
Points against the top six. And we just need to categorise who the top six are, I think. Because, I mean, technically, you wouldn't include Leicester, but they are certainly...
You know what? I think I'm going to put this one bravely and say, put Leicester in there, chuck Arsenal out.
Yeah.
Well, I've got Arsenal and Leicester in it.
So that's top seven, isn't it?
No, that's my top six.
So who's your top six then?
City, Liverpool, Chelsea, United, Arsenal and Leicester.
So it's Spurs you're chucking out.
Spurs are getting chucked out.
All Arsenal. Right, okay. All right, let's do that then.
Okay.
Okay. That's the top six. So how many points against that top six then, Andy?
11.
Okay. Phil Shelley has gone for 8.
Go on, Marcus.
10.
I'm going to go for around dozen again.
You're going to 12, okay. I should point out that last year the final total was 11.
Okay, and what are you going for?
I've also gone for 12.
Okay.
Okay. So that leaves us with the last one, which is the wild card, which is always entertaining and somewhat controversial sometimes. So Marcus, what have you got for us this year?
We are going to score every penalty that we get awarded.
That's Andy Bass. What have you got?
We are going to score 50 goals and we're going to have a positive goal difference at the end of the season. It's going to happen at one point. If I just keep saying it, it will eventually come true. So I'm sticking with that.
Okay. And Al?
What's Phil gone with first?
Phil has got Dunk will be sold.
Dunk?
Huh? Yeah.
Phil, what have you been eating, mate?
It's considering that's the least likely of the three so far.
And yeah. I'm just about to trump that.
Go on.
We will obtain 12 or more points against the relegated teams.
Bloody hell.
Ooh, blimey.
Ooh.
This year, we will turn it around against the relegated teams.
Okay.
Hey,
that's a good one. I like that one.
Yep.
Mine is, let's be honest, I really hope this doesn't happen, and because it's a player which I really, really am excited about. But I have gone Tarek Lamptey will only make 10 or less appearances this season.
It's okay. Kind of a slightly depressing one, but from where we're at the moment, it's actually not unrealistic, is it?
Yeah.
It's probably the most likely of all of ours.
At the moment, yeah.
Depressingly, so well done for bringing it all down.
Oh, crap.
We've all been saying we're going to get all these points, we're going to get all these goals. You're going to say one of our best players is going to play.
Yeah.
Talk about buzzkill.
Yeah. I really want him to play, but I mean, it's, I think these, I don't think this hamstring thing is going away anytime soon, and I think that we will see him, but I just hope that we don't see him until he's actually ready. I don't think we're rushing back. I think,
oh, God, no.
You know, the we've got, in the medical staff we trust, but you know, if we can get 10 or more games out of him, that is going to be exciting, because the guy is such a live wire, such a talent. And
what I fear is that when he does come back, and any player that comes back after a long-term injury, they've lost a yard of pace. No one, he's not going to come back like the Exocet he was.
Mm.
To be honest, he could use a lose a yard and still be quicker.
Still be quicker than
everybody else. He just won't be as far ahead as he was before, but it'll still be ahead.
Yeah, there is that.
Well, like I said, we want to hear your predictions. We particularly want to hear your wild cards because they're always the best ones. But just please contact us at the Albion Raw at yahoo.co.uk or on our Twitter at Albion Raw or on our Facebook page. But that is it for this week. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Andy Bass. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Raw in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 7.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on the podcast. Thanks for listening. See you all again next week. Bye. Guess who just got back today? Them wild eyed boys that had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are great. They were asking if you were around. How you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. I said, the boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town, the boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. Chick that used to dance a lot. Every night she'd be on the floor shaking what she'd got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was red hot. I mean she was steaming. And that time over at Johnny's place, well, this chick got up and she slapped Johnny's face. Man, we just fell about the place. If that chick don't wanna know, forget her. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. I said, blood will spill. And if the boys want to fight, you better let them. That jukebox in the corner blasting out my favorite song. The nights are getting warmer. It won't be long, won't be long till summer comes. Now that the boys are here again,